Blog Talk Radio.
To find an answer on the road.
We are Letting Freedom Ring here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Daria DiGiovanni, and I want to thank you for joining me this evening. I have a very special show planned for tonight, and my good friend, Lady Libertas, also known as Kimberly Moore of Revolutionary Media, will be joining me shortly. But before I bring her on and before I bring on some veterans who I've invited to call in this evening, I just wanted to make special mention of a veteran who I'm especially proud of, and I'm proud of all of them, but I'm particularly proud of one who has recently become my new congressman-elect from Florida District 22, and of course I am speaking of Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Last night, my new congressman-elect, and boy do I love calling him that, gave a moving speech to the West Palm Beach Republican Club in which he honored veterans, upheld American exceptionalism, and vowed to stand firm for the United States Constitution once sworn into office in Washington, D.C. I'd had the good fortune of unexpectedly bumping into Alan as we strode through the parking lot toward the entrance of the Bear Lake Country Club when I had to return to my car to retrieve my flip quarter. He greeted me with a smile and thanked me sincerely for working so hard on his campaign as I gave him a hug and my congratulations, something I'd been unable to do at his victory party due to the sheer size of the crowd. Truly, this is a man of honor and integrity. And I'll tell you, it's hard to describe just how thrilled South Florida is to have this decorated war hero and patriot representing us in Congress. But if you go to my blog at dariaann.wordpress.com, you can watch some videos there that really bring it home. The place was going crazy last night. He gave another fabulous speech, and all of the speeches are just incredibly inspiring. And particularly now that he won the election handily and he is headed to Washington. And let me just say, if anyone had any fears, I did not, but if anyone out there wondered if Alan West was going to go to Washington and stick to his principles, just watch these videos, because this man is standing firm, standing tall, and standing proud for all of us. And I just can't wait for him to get up there and shake things up in the Congressional Black Caucus. So anyway, I would like to go ahead and introduce my special co-host this evening, Kimberly Moore, Lady Libertas. So let me go ahead and get her on the line. Kimberly, are you there?
Hey, Daria, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on for Veterans Day. It's wonderful.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. And just for my listeners, go ahead and just kind of introduce yourself, let them know what you do, and then we'll go ahead and get things started.
Well, you know, I do what we're all doing at the moment, you know. So I blog at lady-libertas.com, although it's been a little bereft of late due to work and a visit from family and things like that. But, you know, we certainly have something up to honor our veterans today. And so I do a little bit of everything, whatever I can, to support our troops who are fighting for us and our new batch of troops going to D.C. to support us.
Absolutely. It's so exciting. You know, one of the things that was most exciting about this campaign season, you know, during the primaries and in the general, was that there were so many veterans in the race, and it was just so great to see that.
Oh, it was fantastic. And, you know, I think in particularly with those candidates, you really get a flavor of the person that they are. I mean, you know what values they stand for. You know, jokingly, I adore Alan West, and I couldn't have been happier that he won. And, you know, it was always a joke when it happened with, you know, Rahm Emanuel in the shower poking people in the chest. And I laughed, and I said, you know, I'd love to see Rahm poke somebody like Alan West in the chest in the showers, you know, and come away with a stump. But, you know.
Wouldn't we all love to see that?
I know. My mind. But, you know, they're not going to be pushed around, are they? I mean, these are men who and women who have put their lives on the line for our country, and they're not going to be intimidated by political liberal bullies.
Absolutely. Yep, and it's just, it's so exciting. So I'm really looking forward to you know, to having them sworn in and all of the excitement we're going to see in 2011 and certainly moving towards 2012. So I've noticed, though, without further ado, I've noticed that we have someone on the line, and I'm not quite sure. I didn't check my email for the phone numbers, but it's a 561 area code, and I believe it might be my friend Ron from Facebook, a U.S. veteran, but let's go ahead and find out. So, good evening. You're on the Liberty Bell Hour.
Hi, Daria. You are correct. It is Ron. How are you?
Ron, I'm great, and thank you for your service, and how are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you. Even though it's Veterans Day, I did have to work. You know, there was a time when this was a holiday. It seemed like everybody got off, but times have changed.
Yeah, I guess they certainly have, and not always for the certainly not for the better. But we're hoping that after these elections, things will get better soon. So, Ron, I wanted to bring you on because, you know, again, we wanted to thank all of our veterans for their service to our country. But I'd also like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about yourself and, you know, share your experiences and tell us first of all, like, what inspired you to join the military.
Well, believe it or not, when I was 12 years old, I went on a cross-country trip from the small hamlet of Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, out to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And it was all done by car, and my grandmother, who drove me out there, she didn't like driving on the interstate. She preferred to drive the old U.S. federal highway system and some of the state roads. So you got off the beaten path, and you got to see things that you normally don't see when you're in a big hurry to get from point A to point B, which is, you know, what the interstates do provide. And when you go through some of those small towns that are off the beaten path and you get to see some of the absolute majestic beauty of this country from the farmlands of the Midwest through the Great Plains up through the mountains through you know, Montana, Wyoming, you know, Glacier National Park, what have you. You know, I just looked at everything. I thought, oh, my God, what absolute splendor and beauty. God is a genius for creating this. And I will defend this when I get older. And as, you know, corny or silly as that may sound, that's the absolute truth. So when I was 18, I joined.
Now, Ron, what branch of the military were you in?
Well, I couldn't quite decide what I wanted. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. Then I did 17 in the Army.
Wow, good. That's awesome. Well, we certainly do live in a majestic, beautiful country. And as Kimberly can attest, having lived in a few different states and now living in Utah, it is pretty magnificent. Kim, let me let you jump in here and add a few comments.
It is. Ron, thank you so much for your service. How fantastic. And, you know, we're so proud of all of you and what you've done for us. Thank you.
I greatly appreciate the kind words, but, you know, Daria, I know if you have an opportunity to look at my Facebook, a lot of people have thanked me for my service. And really, honestly, I tell the people, and this comes from the heart, there's really no need to thank me. It was an absolute honor and privilege to serve my country for 21 years. And I would gladly do it again. And if I could, I would serve gratis.
Wow. I mean, that's just amazing, Ron. And the reason I say, I think part of the reason why so many of us want to make sure that we do thank you is because, unfortunately, there's a segment of our population that truly doesn't get it. I mean, I call them ingrates and useful idiots. And, you know, we saw it in Vietnam with returning soldiers and definitely over the last 10 years or so, and certainly after the wake of 9/11, there was just a spate of one anti-American, anti-military film after another. And it was just so despicable and so disgusting. To people like me, and I'm sure I speak for Kimberly as well, who love their country, to see that happening, and not only because it's just wrong and immoral, but it also puts you guys in more danger when you are out on the battlefield.
Yeah.
I agree, and that's why I think when I got back home from Desert Storm back in 91, when they had the wonderful victory parade through Washington, D.C., a lot of people felt that when General Schwarzkopf took that first step to step off, leading you know, thousands of us in the march, that this was the beginning of atonement for the way the returning Vietnam vets were treated.
Yeah, that was just atrocious. Unfortunately, Hollywood, I guess, hasn't caught up with that tide yet. For the most part, you know, I don't know. I can't even, Kimberly, can you even think? I can't even think of any pro-military films at the moment. I just remember, and I was kind of starting to boycott them, you know, in the 90s just because of the garbage they were putting out. But then, you know, after 9/11 and after our efforts in Afghanistan and Iraq began, and it was just one film after another, I just completely shut, you know, turned off Hollywood for the most part because I don't want my money going to support their causes, and I'm certainly not going to reward them, you know, for what they, for disparaging our troops. I mean, you know, the ironic thing, of course, is that you guys are out there and girls in the military, you know, protecting their right to spew this garbage. And so I'm glad to see that, you know, that we have come that far, that good people do stand up and do honor our veterans and our military, because it's just, you know, again, I think a lot of that is a reaction to just all of the bad things that you guys had to endure in addition to, you know, fighting bad guys.
Oh, I agree. And one thing I've noticed, it's been awful quiet from Hollywood since last Tuesday.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
the ballot box
Kim,
got your tongue.
Think of that.
So I said, ballot box got your tongue?
Yeah. Silence is golden, and that's 24 karat there.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to get off track here, but I was a little, speaking of Hollywood, you know, there was a movie out recently that was released just before the election, just a couple of weeks ago, called I Want Your Money, and I was really hoping that it was going to take off, and unfortunately, it didn't, and I'm not sure if it was just because of all the, you know, the frenzy leading up to the elections. I know myself, it was just crazy. I mean, I felt like I didn't have any time to myself between regular work and then working to get people elected, to get people like Alan West elected. But it didn't do very well at the box office. I think the guy actually lost money. And then I would say that prior to that, like probably the last movie I actually paid money to see was An American Carol. And, you know, I think that did better than I Want Your Money, but you know, I still think that turned out to be a box office disappointment. So it's, you know, I don't know. But by the same token, none of these anti-military films were embraced by the American public either. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and Dari, can I talk just a little bit about Colonel West, if you don't mind?
Absolutely.
All right, thanks. I appreciate that. In 2008, I was living in West Palm Beach. I now reside in northern Wisconsin, and I went down to Republican headquarters to get some yard signs, and while I was there, I was talking to one of the volunteers, and she mentioned Alan West, and I remembered his name from the incident that had happened in Iraq, and I said, oh, I've got to get some Alan West stuff, and she found that in our conversation, she learned that I was a retired soldier. And she immediately gave me Colonel West's personal cell phone number. Now, I didn't want to call him because, you know, he's an extremely busy man. And I sent him a text message the day after the election in 2008 expressing my disappointment. And about 5 seconds after I sent it, he called me back personally. And he thanked me for my support. And he did make a vow that in 2010, we're going to take that hill. And I had the opportunity to get my picture taken with him at the 2010 Tea Party rally on April 15th in West Palm Beach. And I'm ecstatic that that Colonel West is in and that he is going to take that hill.
Yeah, as we all are. You know, and I also have to applaud him, too, because it was one of the nastiest, I think, races in the entire country. And that's saying a lot because there were a lot of nasty smear campaigns going on. But Alan handled it with his, you know, usual strong character and resolve and integrity. I mean, Ron Klein or, you know, the DNC published his Social Security number on mailers. I mean, you know, they tried to paint him, which I thought was so pathetic. You know, speaking of the tea parties, you know, that one commercial, I don't know if you guys saw it, Kim or Ron, but there was this pathetic Ron Klein ad that said, oh, Alan West is too extreme for Florida. And they had video of him, you know, speaking at a tea party that I had actually attended in Fort Lauderdale, you know, with his star-spangled bandana on his head because it was really hot. I think it was in July. I think it was July 4th. And it was right after, you know, Janet Napolitano and the DHS had warned the country about, you know, right-wing extremists. And so he was mocking that and calling himself a right-wing extremist because, as we've all done since then, because it's
a total
joke. And Ron Klein, and to me, though, Kim and Ron, I'll let you both weigh in on this, but I think when that commercial aired, it was at that moment that I realized Alan had this election sewn up because it was so desperate and so pathetic. I mean, they were just reaching. In addition to Ron Klein doing this fake run to the right, which was so transparent. I mean, you know, all you had to do was look at his voting record, which, as Alan pointed out many times, was 98% with Pelosi, you know, so voted for Obamacare, voted for cap and trade, voted for stimulus, you know, all of this big government incursion into our lives. And yet at one of the debates I attended, you know, he was trying to pretend he was this middle-of-the-road candidate, and it was just pathetic. But, Kim, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on that? And then, Ron, go ahead and, you know, jump in after that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, Ron Klein was just absolutely despicable, and it's funny, you're in northern Wisconsin now, Ron. I'm in Utah, but I used to live in South Florida as well. And it's been a relief here in Utah being in a red state, I'll tell you. But, you know, we don't have politicians like Ron Klein running amok here, thankfully. And we just have ones like Bob Bennett, but he got booted, so that was okay. But, yeah, Alan West is just – I mean, he's phenomenal, and again, it certainly goes to speak for the fact that he was one of the most popular Tea Party candidates. I mean, you know, it kind of shifted the NAACP, I think, in calling us racists, and I don't think anyone ever thought to look at Alan West's color. You know, nobody cared, and Ron Klein's a weasel. You know, he never had the stones to stand up and meet with his constituency or anything. When I was down there and working with the South Florida Tea Party, we managed to get an appointment with them. But I basically had to blackmail them into giving us an appointment.
I can attest to that, having attended the town hall in August of 2009, and I many times stood out protesting outside of his office. And he would not give us the time of day.
No. I mean, he was the typical candidate that was just going to, you know, run and duck and figured he was in an area that nobody would ever go away from the Democrats. And so I'm really glad. And, you know, my parents live in that district, and they were tickled pink to have a candidate like Alan West to vote for. My dad is a vet from the Army, and he just, every time he saw Alan, he was so impressed. And so I think it's really fantastic. You know, it's about time. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you're it next time.
Yeah, definitely. Next time around. And Ron, you know, just to back up Kimberly's point too, I mean, at Alan West's victory party last week at the Boca Marriott and last night at the Republican Club meeting up in West Palm Beach, I mean, the crowd was just going crazy. I mean, it's so evident how the genuine love and affection that voters in South Florida have for this man. I mean, they're clearly taken with the content of his character, and his skin color was never an issue. And yet, you know, we're the ones that the left, you know, brands as racist. So
yeah, and
just, very ironic.
Well, I was fortunate that I missed a lot of the mudslinging because I've been up here since early August. You know, that's when the campaign rhetoric really kind of heats up. But I did see the blips and stuff that were posted on Facebook from time to time. And one thing that really, really got me was when Alan West said that Ron Klein called and said, "How's the family?"
Oh, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, I believe it. He called him and asked how he called and asked how, you know, congratulated him, asked how his family was after he had posted Alan's social security number and I guess some personal information as well about his wife, either her like her cell
terrible.
Phone or first like that. And
he
then he had to call
it licensing.
And that evidently he basically just, you know, hung up on him. I mean, that's a cheap shot. You know, one thing with the military, and I don't just say this to at my own back or the back of my military brethren. But when you're an employer, and we the people are the employer of our representatives. When you hire somebody from the military, you generally have a good idea of what you're going to get. You're going to get somebody who is going to work hard. They're not going to cut corners, and they're going to be there. They're not going to be puppets, and they're going to be fiercely loyal, and they're going to be dedicated to their cause and to their beliefs. And with Colonel West, if they could just clone the man. And also too, up here in Wisconsin, we've gone from blue to red with this past election. Thank goodness.
Congratulations. I know that's fabulous. And Ron Johnson beat Russ Feingold, which was one of my favorite victories of the evening.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, and we also got rid of Jim Doyle, who was one of the most liberal governors in the nation. And he kind of went along the belief of the way of Lyndon Johnson did in the 60s. His approval rating was so low, he realized there was no chance that he was going to get reelected. So they tried to save face by saying, no, I choose not to run. And his handpicked successor, Tom Barrett, the uber-liberal mayor of Milwaukee, he got trounced by Milwaukee County Executive Scott Walker. And we're extremely happy about that. And we know that Scott Walker is going to do a bang-up job here for us here in America's Dairyland.
Fantastic. That's impressive. And Milwaukee, too, a very liberal area. That's excellent. And, well, I'm happy to report, too, that Florida is now the most conservative it's ever been, the most Republican it's ever been since Reconstruction. So that's definitely a good thing.
Woohoo!
Part two.
What's that, Ron?
I said this is Reconstruction Part 2.
Exactly. I have another caller on the line from the 973 area code. I think I might know who this is, but let me go ahead and bring them on. Good evening, caller. You are live on the Liberty Bell Hour.
Hi, Daria. It's Don. How are you?
Hey, Don. Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was enjoying the discussion. I had my computer crashed, and fortunately I was able to listen in for a while, and I'm like, you know what? I want to jump in and have fun.
Please do.
Yeah.
So what would you like to say?
First of all, I just wanted to thank him, thank your other caller for his service. I've always said that if I ever had a chance to meet anyone who served during Desert Storm, I'd personally shake his hand. However, you're not here for me to shake your hand, so thank you very much for your service. One of the things that I get the opportunity to do is I get to be a writer, and it's one of my great loves in life, and I don't have to work a customer service job, which I'm very grateful for. And one of the reasons why I get to do that is because of veterans who basically take the bullet for me. And one of the things that I once heard somebody say, somebody said, well, let me ask this, does writing a book ever help, will that help you in defending the country? And the writer fired back and said, no, but it'll make the country worth defending. And I just, again, just anybody that just goes down to their recruiting office, says, sign me up, says, hey, I'm going to spend 3 months away from my family, I'm going to swear an oath of allegiance, and I'm going to basically drop me in the middle of, like, these horrible godforsaken deserts. Like, I heard in, what was it, in Afghanistan and Iraq, it gets up to about 130 degrees in places like this, and yet they're wearing about 100 pounds of equipment, and they're doing this so that, basically, I get to sit around and write. So, today is just an awesome day when we get to basically say thank you to an awesome group of people that were there, that go over and serve on our behalf. And I just want to say thank you to everyone, to our caller that's on the other line for serving our country. I mean, yeah, I know it's what you do, but you don't have to, and you do it for us. And that's awesome. on just so many different levels. So I just wanted to say that.
And I fully agree, Don. I mean, you know, our military and people like Ron, who's on the line with us, I mean, they make it possible for all of us to pursue the American dream. And so I'm just hoping that now that we have a new Congress, not to make this all political tonight, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, you cannot discuss, I don't believe, one without the other, because our military, I mean, they swear an oath to the U.S. Constitution. And when we have elected officials who basically shred the Constitution and destroy the American dream and everything that our veterans are putting their lives on the line for, then certainly, yes, we need to talk about it. You know, I think that's an important point to make and to remember. And also to remember, and Ron, I want you to jump in here, but also to remember that, you know, freedom isn't free, and we have very real enemies who want to destroy us, who hate the Constitution, who hate freedom. And I'm not just talking about, you know, liberals who live within the United States, but certainly, you know, Islamists all over the world who are unfortunately in terror cells within our country and throughout the world. Ron, let me just ask you, I mean, in terms of, you know, this fight that we're facing, I mean, this battle with radical Islam, I mean, how have you felt in terms of, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I just want you to share some of your thoughts regarding, you know, the way the war has been prosecuted, what you think we could be doing better, how you think it could be better handled, for lack of a better word.
Okay, could you repeat that, please, Daria? I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. No, I just, you know, I was mentioning how, you know, we have a very big enemy that we're facing, an enemy to freedom, aside from, you know, the progressivism that's threatening right now to destroy our country in Washington and you know, throughout our country, but, you know, radical Islam. And I just wanted you to speak to that and maybe just offer your thoughts on, you know, the way that we've been prosecuting this war against extremists and, you know, what you would hope that we could maybe do differently, if anything.
Well, one thing that I had hoped would hope for is that we would get a little bit more aggressive with our boots on the ground. Okay, I'm trying to think of the last time somebody was really successful fighting a defensive war. Okay, you've got to take the fight to the enemy, and that was one of the things that President Bush was willing to do, and he knew it was going to be an unpopular decision, but you know. You have a lot more respect for somebody who, you know, who makes the hard right decision than the easy decision. And I think with a little more aggressiveness on the ground, this could victory will come a lot sooner. I was during my two tours that I did in Iraq for Operation Iraqi Freedom. Fortunately, though, those were under President Bush, and we did take the fight to them. But ever since then, everybody on the other side, it's all, oh, you know, we want a withdrawal date. We want a withdrawal date. I mean, really? How dumb can you be? I remember during Desert Storm when we would be able to get some satellite feeds of General Schwarzkopf's evening press conferences. There was always some idiot that would say, especially before the ground war started, so, General, what is your the day when the ground forces are going to start? I mean, he would have to deal with that on almost a daily basis. I mean, are you that, I mean, really, did you really go to journalism school? Or did you send in two box tops to, you know, whatever to get your diploma?
Oh, it's always box tops.
Yeah. And the thing is, with one of the best things that I got to do during my first tour in Iraq was I was the manager for the 9 Iraqi nationals that served my unit as interpreters, and it was an infantry unit. So they were the ones out doing the combat presence patrols, the foot patrols, in that 130-degree heat that your other caller alluded to earlier. And believe it or not, I'm on Facebook with quite a few of them still. Some of them have made it out of Iraq. Some are still there. Some are in other countries as well. And the common theme when we were all together in Iraq and we would sit around and have tea and discuss politics, religion, and different ideologies, the common thing was that they were extremely happy that the Americans were there. Unfortunately, it's a small, minuscule minority section of the population that are the ones that are blowing themselves up and causing all the havoc. But then again, those are the ones that are getting all the press coverage. And I remember asking my one interpreter. He's out of there now, so I'll go ahead and mention his name. His name was Saddam Hussein Faraj.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and he went by the name of Steve. And I asked him about the name, and he said that his parents realized that they joined the Saddam's political party not because they enjoyed Saddam. They realized that to get along, you better go along. And if their children were to have any future, they needed to, you know, play the part. And he had a master's degree in French from the from Baghdad University. And I asked him one night. I said, how was it before we got here? How was it as far as like the essentials, electricity and water? And he said, well, Sergeant, we always had water. We always had electricity. It was always on. And I said, and what's it like now? He goes, well, he says now it's. And this was in July. Well, now we get electricity for maybe, 4 hours a day and, maybe water for 2 hours a day. And I said, well, what would you prefer, to have it all the time in Saddam or do without and not have Saddam? He said, definitely do without. And he proceeded to tell me that he was in Baghdad when they pulled down the statue of Saddam. And he said he ran up, took off his sandals, and beat on Saddam's head with it.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
And, right. And the common theme amongst the amongst my interpreter friends was that they were extremely glad that the Americans were there and that they hope that we do not bail out, so to speak, before the job is done and everything is settled and Iraq is once again autonomous. Unfortunately, one of my interpreters was a female, a very nice lady, and I learned a lot about her, especially about Iraqi divorce. And because she was going through one, but I found out later on that the insurgents found out that she was working as an interpreter for the Americans, and when she had visitation with her four children, they caught her and executed her and her children.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Can I ask a question about this? The one thing that completely annoyed me about the way that the whole war was run from the very beginning was they all centered it around those weapons of mass destruction. Why? I never understood why President Bush didn't say from the very beginning, look, in northern Iraq there is a fuselage and where Al-Qaeda practiced. The Bush doctrine was, you're either for us or against us. If you support terrorism, we'll get in, we'll root you out. And just that fuselage and those people using that right there should have been enough of a reason for us to go in Iraq. And then people that would came back with the argument of, well, Osama bin Laden is a religious leader and Saddam Hussein was a secular leader. What would the two of them have in common? And I never understood why that argument could not have been, don't be so freaking naive. The one thing they have in common is they both hate the United States. And both have, and as the old saying goes, my enemy's enemy is my friend. And I never understood why that fuselage was not enough of a reason, why they had to do, why basically, I'm sorry to say this, George W. Bush used the UN as the means for us to go into Iraq. It was just, I never understood that. Have any of your people said anything to you about that, Ron? Have they explained to you, well, this was the reason, or have been most of them just kind of like, yeah, we have to follow orders?
Well, those decisions were made by people further up the pay grade, pay scale than what I am. Okay, I was just an enlisted guy. So, my job was to do as I was told. One thing I will say is you were right. The thing that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden have in common is, of course, a common hatred for us. And plus two, all those years, when people talk about where's the weapons of mass destruction, well, how many years did Saddam have to hide them when he blocked off sites from the UN inspectors that were supposed to come in and inspect things? And, a weapon of mass destruction, I mean, if you take a 12-ounce Diet Coke can, in my younger days I would have said Coke. Now that I'm older, it's Diet Coke. you filled that 12-ounce empty can with anthrax spores, that is enough just in amongst itself, you know, to wreak total havoc on a large city. So, yes, mm-hmm. that's a weapon of mass destruction.
Exactly.
Okay. How hard would it be to hide a 12-ounce can in that, you know, that desolate country?
Yeah, because, and this was something that Daria said before, that one of the President Bush's biggest problems was the fact that he allowed the liberal media to basically define the argument and define the war. And the thing was, that was so sad about the whole thing was, you had a liberal media that was not anti-war. They were just anti-President Bush, and anything that they could get their hands on to be anti-President Bush about, that was it. And it was just kind of like, Bush supports the war, therefore we're against the war. And we will do everything we possibly can. We'll keep making fun of them, going, where's the weapons of mass destruction? And unfortunately, what that did, and this was, again, something that I've heard Daria say in the past, the problem is that because that allowed that to define the Bush allowed that to define the argument, it put so many of our guys in at harm's way. And that's also one of the great big tragedies about this is I've hung out with Marines. In fact, I spent a week at camp down in South Carolina, like researching, like I was invited by the Marines to come down, and I was there, and I saw firsthand, and I was eaten by sand fleas, and it was quite an amazing experience. And when you watch these Marines, the whole reason why there are Marines is basically, look, you're going to be the guys that stab the other person that wants to hurt the United States, so I don't have to. And it's like, step back and let the Marines do their job. And I just wish that there was more of that, and unfortunately there was not.
I'm going to jump in here, Daria, if you don't mind for a second.
Sure.
And in. And I actually, you know, Don, I kind of agree with you. I'm a little bit of a hawk, so, you know, my criticism of GW with the entire war was that he tried to fight a politically correct war. And my philosophy is we put American boots on the ground. We are there to win, and we are there to do what we have to do to win. And you don't cow your enemies by being nice to them. And, you know, when shock and awe makes everybody yawn and go, oh, look, it must be the Americans. I mean, you know, the fact that American boots are on the ground should strike fear in the hearts of our enemies. And the fact that, you know, that they were so emboldened, you know, to pull off something like 9/11 speaks to the lack of fear that they had under the Clinton administration. GW should have put it back in there. And frankly, the entire discussion about the weapons of mass destruction, everybody in this world knows that Saddam Hussein had them. And whether they got over the borders before we got in there, or, you know, where they paid off the UN inspectors, or they are still buried in the desert somewhere, is almost moot at this point, but we know he had them. He killed villages of Kurds, you know, with chemical warfare. I mean, that he was testing. I mean, this man was absolutely diabolical. So, you know, to all of those people go, what about the weapons, ha-ha, mass destruction? It's like, are you serious? I mean, you know.
I know.
Let's support you over there.
And what about all the violated UN resolutions? And I would also add that the guy was financing terrorists all over the country.
Yeah.
Like, what did they think? Was that just a hobby? I mean, it's crazy. But Don, let me point out one other thing. It wasn't just the liberal media. Unfortunately, our troops become the pawns of self-centered, self-serving, egotistical politicians like Harry Reid, who declared the war lost in 2007,
when our men
and women were in the heat of battle, emboldening our enemies. And, Ron, I want you to kind of jump back in here, if you would, and kind of add your two cents again.
Just real quick, I'm sorry, Ron, I don't want to cut you off. I just want to insert really quickly. I had the opportunity to listen to Rush's interview with GW, and he was a complete class act the whole way. He refused to even, you know, I mean, Rush wasn't even, like, baiting him. He just, like, flat out said, aren't you going to say something about the current administration? You know, and GW is like, nope, I'm not going to. But you know what he did say is that Reed's statement was unforgivable, and I agree. So, sorry, Ron.
Awesome.
Oh, no, thanks for sharing that, Kimberly. I wasn't aware of that, and I applaud him for that. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. And one thing, too, okay, it was documented that he did have these weapons of mass destruction. Just because you can no longer find them doesn't mean that he's no longer, you know, no longer accountable for them. Okay, absence of them doesn't mean they didn't exist. Okay, he's got them. They're just hidden out there somewhere.
Yeah, someone better check Siri in the backyard.
Unfortunately, with the the liberal press, it's like, show me, show me, show me. You got to show me. You got to show me. I don't believe you. And one quick thing, on my first tour in Iraq, we were all given, each of our units in our company offices back on our different bases, we were given these tactical maps of the entire country of Iraq. And, of course, then they would have, like, adjoining sheets that would go, like, in the first And the unit that was in the office next to ours, I liked how they had their map labeled. You know, had Iraq, then they had Jordan. Then instead of Syria, they just had the word next written over it.
Nice. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
And my gut feeling myself, and this pure speculation, I wouldn't be surprised if they were not over in a warehouse somewhere in Damascus.
I agree with that 100%, which is why we should have bombed Syria while we had the chance. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I have heard stories like that. Like, I've had a chance to interview some other Marines in the past for other things that I've done, and they'll tell these stories of how they know that they know of different things happening, which kind of in an interesting way kind of shows the type of character that President Bush has. Because one of the things that I had heard was, like, there are satellite images of at various times, like before the, like, war really started heating up, like when Colin Powell was standing before the UN and basically trying to say, like, hey, everybody get off your butts, and Powell sat there and he thought to myself, boy, I hope this works. If not, I am so voting Democrat next election. And you know he was thinking that. And, like,
he's
Powell.
A traitor.
Yeah. And Powell said that. And then there was, like, satellite photos of stuff of, like, trucks going into Syria and trucks coming out. And there were also things like cargo ships going from Syria or going from Iraq to Syria that they basically said, oh, we're just there for, like we're just there to pick up men for service or something like that. But yet it would be documented that there was, like, so many tons of, like, there were so many tons of cargo in the cargo when it left Iraq. And then when it arrived in, Syria, it put in there, like, oh, now we have X amount of tons less. And people are like, well, what did you drop off in Syria? And the ship's captains would go, nothing. Why? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And President Bush could have easily pulled out all of these little random facts to show, hey, look, we have this, we have this, we have this. But he didn't do that. And I don't know if it was a level of security that he did, or if he thought that that would put people in harm's way. But it kind of was like you'd hear little snippets of things like that, and I just never understood why didn't he use that stuff like that to say, hey, look, this is proof that there's weapons of mass destruction.
I found it very interesting during the interview with Rush that one of the things that he said and why he never, like, spoke back to his detractors, like, during his presidency or since his presidency. And he said one of the reasons is because he believed that the office of the president should be unsullied, basically, and that it should be an office with the greatest regard, and that he was the president of everyone, and for him to single out just the people who were negative towards him, he thought would have been disrespectful to the office of the presidency. And I thought that was very interesting. And, you know, I think that that probably, that philosophy carried through a little bit with the weapons of mass destruction issues. I also believe Kofi Annan was so dirty and crooked that there were things probably going out of Iran, or Iran too, Iraq, you know, under the guise of the UN and the oil for food and all that great stuff. I think there was probably stuff going back and forth that way. And I think that at the time it would have been dangerous to attempt to undermine the UN at that time as well, and would have put a lot of people in danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I miss having a president with honor and integrity. I mean, I disagreed with GW on a lot of things, especially in his domestic policy, but I always supported our efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was a little disappointed when you went too PC in that regard, but I got to tell you, I really miss having a president who our enemies feared and that our allies respected, because they at least knew that he meant business. And you know, we could wake up every morning and go to sleep every night as Americans, knowing that our president cared about us and he was doing everything in his power to save us from another terrorist attack. And unfortunately, the polar opposite is true right now. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make this a downer, so I don't want to dwell on that aspect, but it's just, what a study in contrast, and a study in someone, and a study in personal character as well. I mean, again, I think he's a stellar human being. Disagree with him on a lot of domestic policies, but supported his efforts on the war, and my God, his love for our military and the troops was just obvious everywhere he went, and their mutual love and regard for him, and I really missed that as an American.
I was laughing today. I heard a report saying that they go, and Vice President Biden today led a service for the troops and everything. And I just sat there and I just went, can anybody still believe that there's a Vice President Biden? I'm really, that's the one area about this. I'm just like, really? Joe Biden's our vice president? I really, really, there is on some level, I'm honestly waiting for somebody to just kind of step out of nowhere and just go, fooled you. I'm sorry. It turns out the real vice president is this guy. It's just every time I hear Joe Biden, I'm sitting there just going, this is the guy that plagiarized everything and encouraged a man in a wheelchair to stand up in front of a group of people. I'm just still waiting for that. I'm still waiting for the real guy to show up. Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, it's been 2 years. I overslept. I was the guy that was really elected, not Mr. Maverick or the other dude. I'm just, yeah, it meant to be me. I apologize now. Where did I leave the keys to the White House?
My favorite Biden gaffe was when Biden was on his bus and, he's getting an interview and he's saying, well, you know, when the stock market crashed in 1929, President Roosevelt went on TV to calm the nation.
I remember that with Katie Couric, and no one bothered to correct him. And of course, and we're winding down on the show, so this could be a whole other topic. But, you know, again, just another example of the stunning double standard and hypocrisy when you apply that, the treatment of Biden to the treatment of Sarah Palin, and the treatment of Obama to the treatment of Sarah Palin during the 2008 campaign. But guys, I can't believe it. An hour flies by so quickly. I want to kind of go around and give everybody a chance to sort of reintroduce themselves, make some closing little statements, and then I'm going to be heading down to a vigil for our troops in Fort Lauderdale. So, Ron, you're our veteran, so let's start with you, and we'll kind of go around.
Well, I just want to thank you, Daria, for the work that you're doing, and I'm really looking forward to Sunday when you have your own show on Fox, you know, probably maybe between Glenn Beck and Hannity. And as far as my fellow veterans that are out there, they are the true heroes. They're still in uniform. They're still out there on the front lines. And a lot of our true heroes lie in places such as Arlington, Normandy, and the Argonne Forest, and lest we ever forget them. And I do thank everybody for their kind words and their thanks regarding my service. It's greatly appreciated. You all showed your thanks on November 2nd, and that's all the thanks that I'll ever need.
Oh. Well, God bless, Ron, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. It was an honor.
And Don, let's go to you. We have parting thoughts.
Oh, yeah. I also wanted to remind everyone that portions of the book Water Sign go to Soldiers Angels and help support a wonderful cause like that. I mean, it's a wonderful book. It's a lot of fun. Daria put in there about how wonderful a Navy guy could be. Not that I'm interested, but that how fun a Navy guy could be to date. So I just wanted to remind people, especially considering it's Veterans Day, that Soldiers Angels could use as much assistance as they can get. And Water Signs is a great read.
Well, thank you, Don. And that's soldiersangels.org. I'll put a link in the chat room. Okay, and Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us. Lady Libertas, your final thought.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone. I mean, and Daria, you're so special, such a special light. And to all of our vets, I mean, even though today is Veterans Day, we can't forget them. The holidays are coming up, and we have Americans that are not at home and not with their families. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things that, you know, we need to organize and do and you know, to make sure that we can bring a little bit of the excitement since the midterms and the Christmas and Thanksgiving spirit to our troops and those that are overseas. So,
amen.
That's it. And I'll wait for you on Fox, too.
Well, thank you. From your lips to God's ears, that's quite a compliment.
Hey, they'll give
that
Scientologist their own show. I don't see why they couldn't give Daria her own show.
Well, thank you guys for the vote of confidence. And who knows, maybe that will happen someday. But I wanted to thank all of you for joining us. Thank you again, Kimberly, Don, and Ron, who was our special veteran participant tonight. Thank you to the audience for listening. God bless the USA. God bless our veterans. You can check out my blog at dariaann.wordpress.com because I have some really wonderful videos of Alan West and some other South Florida patriots on there, and including Marco Rubio, our newly elected senator. And
Marco with a natural tan. He was born with a natural tan.
Exactly.
Right, he absolutely was.
And next week, I just want to point out, I will be welcoming the conservative diva to the Liberty Bell Hour, and we're going to be discussing an exciting new project that's in the works concerning some really cool conservative women. So I look forward to that next week. Have a great week, everyone. Happy Veterans Day, and God bless America.
All right, God bless America.
And a delicate melody, but I say I like the bruises, 'cause a melody don't mean a thing if we don't have the strength to sing. And I won't be made to ever feel ashamed. Get it wrong. I'm American made. Got American parts, got American faith in America's heart.